When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is a podcast from The Times. Go to thetimes.co.uk.
Welcome to the game. I'm Gabriel Marcotti, and I'm here with all the latest from a fascinating weekend of FA Cup action. Through to the 26th round of the game this season, Julian Lawrence, Stuart Robson, and of course, Matt Dickinson. Which one of these guys is the Crawley Town of the show? I have my own idea, but we'll find out soon anyway. So let's start at Anfield, where an underdog was looking for their second upset of the week. It was kind of weird to describe Liverpool as the underdog, especially in this climate. Although I must say, there's no Liverpool supporters on the show this week, at least no uncloseted ones. All right, Dicko, I want to start with you because obviously we could see this coming. There's often aggro between these two teams, and in this case, there was also the Suarez and the Evra and all that jazz. And I know that there was some fool making monkey gestures, and he's since been arrested and so on. But I actually thought, just leaving the football out of it for a second, I actually thought there would have been more aggro and the atmosphere would have been more horrible. And in reading the reports, those people who mentioned it almost kind of felt like a lot of people said, oh, well, this is going to be bad. I might as well mention that it's bad. But was it that bad?
Well, that's the trouble. I guess we're trying to put it on the sliding scale of, you know, truly, truly horrendous or slightly horrendous. I mean, I put it this way, I don't think it is a great situation when a guy, you know, in Evra's position is being booed, you know, incessantly by the best part of 40,000 people, and then that's being dismissed as, quotes, a bit of banter. You know, are we...
Who dismissed it as a bit of banter, though?
That was Kenny Dalglish described it as a bit of banter, what was going on between the fans. And I just don't think, you know, I don't think anyone is comfortable with Evra being targeted like that. I mean, I think Tony Barrett described it this morning as sort of, well, it was as much for, you know, the evidence he gave as the colour of his skin. Well, you know, I just, you know, given the position he was in the first time, the complaint he made, the complaint being upheld, you know, I don't think any of us can be entirely comfortable with the reception he got at Anfield.
Yeah, well, I mean...
Can you?
No, I mean, I don't think... I mean, I think Tony Barrett is correct. I see no evidence to suggest that Evra was being racially abused, but he was being abused because of the evidence he gave him, because he stood up and he spoke against Luis Suarez, and that annoys them. I mean, you know, he wasn't the only Black United player on the pitch. But I don't know. I think, I guess to me, I thought the situation, you know, apart from the abuse, the situation could have been worse. It could have been, and I'm sure that you had the Munich chance and the Hillsborough chance and so on, but...
I know people in Liverpool. Most of the same Liverpool fans I speak to are not comfortable you know, to say the least, with how it's been handled over the last couple of months. And that's what I come back to. I know Jonathan Northcroft was, apparently he was on Sky yesterday and talking about how, you know, he's got a black partner and from Liverpool, and how upset she's been by it. And I think that reflects the view, say, of most intelligent Liverpool fans I speak to. They're not comfortable with it. They want to move on as fast as possible, and they don't want their fans to keep stirring it up and being, you know, perceived to be in this sort of hugely defensive mindset. It's going to take quite a while for that to sort of be diluted. Intelligent Liverpool fans I speak to are not at all at ease with the, you know, where the club has found itself in the last couple of months. And that includes, Saturday, even though, yes, you know, commentators are right to say it could have been worse, it has been worse, it might have been a lot worse, and we should be thankful for those small mercies, I guess.
Julien, from what you saw, Everett was on his best behaviour, and he kind of, you know...
I thought he did well to stay calm, because I think, a bit like Dico said, I think it was a disgrace the way he was abused. I mean, you know, imagine another... you know, black player who got the same, you know, same problem with someone like Suarez that ever had, it would maybe put him off to complain about it, because of all, you know, he might think it's not worth it to have all that abuse after just saying that someone called me a Negro. And I don't think it was good for the game the way the Liverpool fans treated Patrice Evra on Saturday. I really do.
Stuart, you played in some very highly charged times for some rather highly charged clubs. I think more West Ham than Arsenal, of course, because, you know, with all due respect, it is what it is. But as a player on the pitch, I mean, we've asked before, but you must have been in situations where you were aware of either you yourself getting abuse or teammates getting abuse. Did you ever think about that? Why are they having a go at so-and-so? Or...
when you're on the field, yes, you hear it. It shouldn't make any difference. It never made any difference to me.
It's just background noise.
It's just background noise. The only abuse that would upset you is abuse from your own supporters. That's the only abuse that would have ever affected,
Did that happen? Did you have your own supporters abusing you or one of your teammates?
I was very fortunate. I never got abuse. I was player of the year at all three clubs I played at, so I was quite popular. But a lot of other players I saw, it did affect them.
Teammates
got abuse, you know, just for the way they were playing. You know, you'll see it now. If you go to Arsenal, we saw it last week when Arshavin comes on the field. Now, once he goes on the field and he gets that sort of abuse off the fans, and it's very, very difficult for you to enjoy your football or to play well.
Back to the issue at hand, a guy who I think has Manchester United fans have certainly publicly backed him to the hilt, but it's been a big talking point. De Gea, some of his goalkeeping, and obviously, you know, Andy Carroll runs into him. It's the old Nat Lofthouse thing. We can debate it, whether it's a foul, not a foul. But Dicko, do you think De Gea's, you know, that incident aside, are you one of those people who buys the whole, like, he needs to go to the gym and get bigger, because of course you can't be a good goalkeeper unless you're built like a bodybuilder.
Well, back to the Schmeichel, talked about how he used to, they used to sort of go out and training and get the players to sort of, you know, headbutt him, sort of fashion new style in those days to sort of toughen him up and getting used to playing in English league and English conditions. I've sort of taught myself ever since I made a fool of myself. Judging Robert Pires after a flaky first season to try and withhold judgment for a season on particularly on certain foreign players who have clearly shown a bit of class elsewhere and are struggling in their first season over. But, you know, there's no doubt he is struggling. I mean, for the amount of financial outlay they gave for De Gea and for him not to be able to hold down a regular first team place, and for him to be sort of Fergie, to be constantly trying to sort of second guess where the best place for him to play is, what sort of conditions, what sort of game. I mean, I was almost surprised he did pick him in this game, given the likelihood of Carroll playing, given the likelihood of some of Liverpool's approach. And, you know, I don't think it was all his fault. There's a certain lack of of height and power and decisiveness in United's defence, but it was an accident waiting to happen, if you ask me.
Was it a foul?
The Carroll incident? Yeah, I'd say so, but that doesn't excuse the point. This sort of changed the point that, you know, that picking De Gea for this game, I don't think. Well, I was surprised.
Well, exactly. But if it was a foul, Stuart, then you could have had, you know, I mean, you could have had some combination of Peter Schmeichel and Peter Cech in there, or somebody 10 feet tall, and if you fouled, you're fouled, right? I mean, it doesn't matter how big you are.
I think goalkeepers are overprotected, first and foremost, as soon as they get
touched.
So
you don't think it was correct?
I think it was correct. The goal itself, you know, it's very difficult. When there's players in front of you, what's he going to do? Wrestle people to get in front of them? I think he should work harder to try and get in front of them. But the real fault came from Carrick. Carrick was marking Agger. Carrick started to run towards the ball with Agger. Agger just stepped back and heads the ball into the goal, where obviously De Gea had started to come, but he couldn't get there. But the real fault was with Carrick. It was poor defending, and that's why when he played at centre half, Manchester United weren't a very good side.
Julian, do you like this whole physical?
No, I agree. No. I mean, I think people are a bit harsh with De Gea, really, because like Stuart said, no one challenged Agger at all on the ball. No one even jumped. He was the only one to jump, and it was the easiest goal he's ever scored. And to be fair, I think the most shocking defending United had on Saturday was Evra on the second goal. The only thing Carroll could do on the long ball like that was just flick it to Coat, and Evra was just sleeping there. I don't know what he was doing. That was far worse.
Not for the first time this season. If you go back over all the goals Manchester United have conceded so far this season, Evra's positional play has been excellent going forward, but he's stopped recovering. He doesn't want to recover anymore, and that was a prime example of it.
That was more shocking than De Gea, I thought.
Are there any Manchester United defenders who don't stink, Stuart? Bad word to say about all of them.
No, Smalling, I think, has got good potential. Jones has potential, but if you've seen him from the first few weeks to the last few weeks, yeah, I know he's injured.
He's deteriorated,
and he's lost his way, and he hasn't seen danger
Realized
well enough.
Bad back, yeah. Vidic can't walk, so, the Wonder Twins
well,
are
They've
hurt,
got one magnificent defender, the best defender in the Barclays Premier League, and that's Vidic, and he's unfit, he's injured. So that's the problem that Manchester United have got at the moment.
But I think even if you say that, you know, part of the goal was in both goals is overblown, I don't think anyone would say that De Gea has sort of come in and for, what was he, did he cost 18 odd million? You know, he's playing, as you would hope, clearly talented and obviously expensive goalkeeper would play. Say, I go back to the original point about Pires and many other foreign players, he deserves and needs time to make a big adjustment and to a big adjustment like, you know, the huge club like Manchester United. But Ferguson is clearly nervous about when to pick him and his form and his temperament and what all of that, you know, transmits to the rest of the defence.
Looking at Liverpool, when I saw the lineup, Julian, and I thought, you know, oh, look, Carragher. And I thought to myself, you know, this process where Kenny's angry, they lose to Bolton. They pull off that I thought really spirited performance against City. They're through the final, and then he changes it again, you know, against their biggest rival, and chucks some Carragher in there. Like, it's counterintuitive, but it obviously worked. Making a face, so you think.
No, I just struggled to follow him. I struggled to follow Kenny. I mean, I really don't understand. The game against Stoke was, for me, just the worst tactical decisions I've ever seen. For the best defence in the Premier League. The Stoke one, when they drew 0-0 at home.
He
played with three men at the back and like so five in midfield. It was just like, even the players on the pitch didn't know, you know, who was playing where, what to do. And I really struggled to follow him. And I think he's got a very good squad that should be doing better than what they're doing. And for me, part of it is because of all those changes he makes all the time, all those tactical things that he does, which most of them, in my opinion, have no sense.
You say that it worked. It didn't work because Carragher was non-existent in the first half. He didn't do any defensive work because there wasn't nobody in and around him for Manchester United.
His leadership.
He hardly touched the ball. And when he was playing, sometimes he dropped in between his two centre-halves when there was no need to. He couldn't get on the ball and dictate the play. And he was Liverpool Liverpool spare player in that hole just in front of his two centre halves. So it only changed when he actually came off the field. That's when Liverpool started playing well. So it was a mistake by Dalglish. I think he probably recognised that he made a mistake by putting Carragher on there in the first place.
It's probably the first time ever he played there, Carragher. No, he can't even pass the ball. How can he play in that holding role?
I think he played some midfield earlier in his career. In fact, I think he was a striker actually.
Really?
When he was even younger. Yeah, but no, I'm interested, but Dicko, I'm interested in the process of Dalglish doing something, you know, which we can say didn't work perhaps, but changing it again, changing a successful team. And ultimately, you know, for all the criticism, I look back there and, you know, his defense, Glenn Johnson's a guy, but nobody says, oh, he can't defend. Look at Glenn Johnson, he can't defend. Skrtel and Agger, I believe, are the same Skrtel and Agger who were kind of ordinary for Hodgson and for Rafa. And, you know, Jose Enrique has been good, but he's been up and down, and he's lost his defensive shield in midfield, and yet they haven't conceded many goals this season. I mean, can we give Dalglish a little credit there?
Well, you can get a little credit. I mean, they are improved on a year ago and improved on, you know, where it was heading under Roy Hodgson. But I still think there's some big issues unresolved, so, you know, some big decisions for Fenway to make about how much more they're going to back him financially until he sort of proves that the money he's already spent has gone the right way. So I agree with Julian there about, you know, you shouldn't just sort of sit there and say, well, because it's better than it was a year ago, therefore it's as good as it should be. I think he's changing around an awful lot, sometimes inexplicably. He's still trying to explore the potential of this squad, and I don't think it's, you know, it's not just sort of A plus. Kenny's doing a great job. I think you know, I sort of, you know, got some stick from Liverpool fans, you know, that wrote a slightly sceptical piece about it all last week, and they won two games, and of course the good old Twitter sphere lights up with, you know, eat your words, you fool. Well, you know, I'm not going to eat my words, you fool, because, you know, I think it's a work in progress. We're still a lot to be proven.
Hey, moving on to another local rivalry, which was also charged for all the wrong reasons. And by the way, after the show, I hope we don't have to talk about race for a good long while. QPR and Chelsea. Now, Dicko, I want to understand this because I don't really want to be one of those people who criticizes the FA all the time, blah, blah, blah. But I actually just kind of think, like, for the past 18 months, and even though I thought things were going to be better with Bernstein, but maybe he's not the problem. Maybe it's the people who work under him. Maybe it's the mysterious Alex Horn. What the hell is this all about? The handshake? And no, you mustn't get a handshake. You could prejudice the courts. I mean, you know, I was in the States this week. I tried to explain this to people, and they looked at me like I had three heads. What the hell? Can you just summarize what happened and try to explain why this happened?
Well, as far as I'm aware, you know, there is the usual handshake. QPR players, we are led to believe, were sort of decided to come out en masse and sort of be in solidarity with Anto Ferdinand that they would not shake Terry's hand.
Fair enough.
Basically, this was clearly going to be the back page picture in every newspaper, if not the front page picture. And actually, in those circumstances, can you seriously blame the FA or both clubs for just saying, hang on a minute, let's just scrap the whole thing?
If the FA told the players, okay, no handshakes, you're not allowed to handshake, it's the same argument as when the FA did their stupid Poppygate garbage, where they're like, you know, we're going to force people to wear poppies and we're going to get into strop with
thieves. That was the day. I mean,
this wasn't the Daily Mail. It was the FA. You're going to tell me the Daily Mail runs the FA?
No. Well, there are times when it might seem that way. But now that, you know, that was the day that someone at the FA with too much time on their hands floated an idea, and the Daily Mail, you know, decided it was fantastic, and then next thing you know, you've got the EDL on the roof of FIFA.
Exactly.
And when you're on the same side as the EDL,
so this time around, this time around, you're telling
this is a pragmatic decision on Saturday morning. you know, how good would it be for the game, for any of our sanities, if front back page pictures everywhere were a line of 11 guys refusing to shake hand with John Terry?
Well, the best thing is not to have a handshake in the first place.
Well,
I'm not sure why we have handshakes before the game.
Well,
it never used to happen. You know, I'm not sure why they do it now. If you want to shake somebody's hand after the game and everybody look as though they've got on well, then that's a great thing. In rugby, they do the hacker towards each other, and I just don't understand what this handshake is all about.
I think that's a fair point. But all I'm saying is, I don't really see how anyone can blame the FA or the clubs for coming to this. The decision that just scrapping it on Saturday was just made sense, because you know they didn't want a load of crappy pictures everywhere. And can you blame them for that?
Yeah, I can actually, and I think I will.
Why?
Because
why? Well, what's the
who are you to go and tell players what they can do before the game? Yeah, I'm sorry, but they're telling them they have to shake hands before the game, don't they? They don't tell them they have to shake hands. It's a convention.
They have to line up.
You don't have to shake hands. I don't remember anybody going.
The whole point of that lineup is so that they shake hands. Right. It's a waste of time. The only thing it's good for is co-commentators and commentators to look and see what the player looks like when you don't know the teams. That's the only thing it's good for.
Dicko, hey, so they actually did this because they didn't want pictures coming out of players avoiding each other. This is the reason they give, because I also read that it was going to somehow prejudice like the court proceedings of John Terry.
I think that's an slightly far-fetched extrapolation of that. You know, therefore, if it had been on the front, I agree. That's pushing it. But I mean, I think the main reason was simply because it was just, you know, I've heard some people say, "Oh, the FA scrapped it because they didn't want to embarrass John Terry, who is remarkably or not still the England captain." But I think ultimately it was a sort of PR-y type decision, and both clubs agreed. So if both clubs agree and the FA think, well, this is an easy way out, well, it's going to happen, isn't it?
So Sean Wright Phillips had wanted to embrace his cuddly former teammate Peter Cech. He wouldn't have been able to.
Well, I'm sure he could have arranged a little personal private handshake.
I think they did in the tunnel before the game.
On the halfway line. Exactly. If the conclusion of all of this is let's just scrap the whole sort of charade before the games, then I don't think any of us are going to lose any sleep over it, are we? But it's been going along perfectly happily for 3 or 4 years now without, I'm not sure you've done too many podcasts of let's scrap the handshake. It's come up because of particular circumstances, and both of them just coincidentally seem to involve John Terry. It's amazing. Amazing.
Yeah, exactly.
Amazing how he seems
and
to
there
be
was also ball. William Gallas. And Samir Nasri was one, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You guys have to stop bringing everything back to Arsenal. That's two straight topics that you've done it.
So we were talking about handshakes. There was another handshake, didn't
we? Are we leading a scrap the handshake campaign?
I just don't like it when people go and infringe on. I mean, you do the handshakes before the game because it gives off an image of friendly competition. Here you've got two teams who supposedly they agree they're not gonna shake hands. At least I think they were just not gonna shake John Terry's hands. I think they were very happy to shake Florin Malouda's hand.
My 9-year-old kid played football yesterday, and they don't shake hands before the game. At the end, they all have to line up and shout "Hip hip hooray" for the other team.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
You should celebrate yourself every day, but some days you should celebrate with jewelry.
Whether you want to commemorate an unforgettable moment or just bring some added sparkle to your collection, Blue Nile can offer you expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com today and experience the ease and convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com. BlueNile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
And then shake their hands.
So you're going back to your public school days, aren't you, Dicko?
Yeah, that's the answer. We get Chelsea to like, we get John Terry has to shout three cheers for QPR, hip hip hooray at the end. There we go. There's my solution.
Football-wise, it wasn't much of a game, but I got to go back to this. Daniel Sturridge wins a penalty. You know, I put up with pundits on TV saying, oh, look, you know, when, like, Balotelli goes down easy, like, oh, well, but he's Italian, so you understand that. Sturridge, I know he has a vowel on the end of his name. Is he another cheating foreigner import? Or what? Where did he learn this? You can't even say he learned it from... You know, because what he played at Chelsea, and you know whose strikers are African, and I mean, where do you learn this? Yeah, was it a dive, or was he just being clever?
Well, most players now go down far too easily, and Sturridge was another one. Look at the game earlier in the season when David Luiz gives Helgeson a little shove in the back, and Helgeson throws himself to the ground. It's a penalty, and I think Sturridge did it. So it's wrong. We want to see players stay on their feet, but they don't do it anymore. And we, the press, aren't helping, because when I'm doing co-commentaries, the producers and the directors are looking at was that a push? Was that a dive? Was this that? They're looking for it. There's something that doesn't even happen. You don't even know about it, and they say, in the box, we're just going to go back because someone was pulling somebody's shirt. Can we have a look at that? We're looking for... And now players make the most of it, and they'll dive and they'll jump around and they'll scream now when they get tackled. It's embarrassing.
Dicko, was it the kind of thing where, as Jose Mourinho says, Sturridge actually just helped the referee make a decision because he was fouled? And the referee being, you know, because the referee was Mike Dean... He might not have given the foul if Sturridge hadn't gone down.
No, I'm sure on this one. This one was plain throwing yourself down. I mean, he didn't have to. So no, I mean, look, there are those occasions, and as you said, there's the great English hypocrisy when Michael Owen takes an opportunity to go down over an Argentinian in a World Cup. Then we all say, well done.
Paul scores with his hand.
Stinky, cheating foreigner. Then it's it may be different. But no, this one was stinky Englishman.
Julian, Ramirez gets hurt. He's possibly been Chelsea's best midfielder this season. Should Villas-Boas go and look to the transfer market now?
Yeah, it might be a bit late though, but no, I think it's a big blow for Chelsea. Yeah, it was really, you know, he's improved so much. I remember some podcast we did last year where we were very critical of him. I think
not me.
No, maybe not you, but me for sure. But no, a bit like what Dicko was saying earlier with foreign players, I think they need a bit of time to adapt, and that's what Ramirez did. I think he had some very, very poor games last season, and he's done much, much better this season, and I think they're going to miss him.
Well, he's the one player that gives them that little bit of drive at the moment. You know, when he's closing the ball down, he does it with urgency, he gets tight to people, he wins tackles, and when they win the ball back, when he runs forward at great pace. He's quick, whether he's playing as a midfield player or whether he's playing as a wide right player, because he's played as wide right in two or three games this season, and he's done very well. He's the one that, because that's where Chelsea are lacking at the moment. They can't play with urgency or tempo anymore. They're not doing that. Ramirez is the one player that has been.
It's always going to score a goal before Drogba gets back from the African Cup of Nations. This is the I'm not sure I can bear the thought that Drogba was just going to come out. He's still not going to score the goal and just walk back into the team.
I knew somebody was going to pick on Torres at some point, but I think the answer is probably no, Dicko. But just to wrap it up, QPR, I almost got the sense afterwards that Mark Hughes was like, well, you know, oh, gee, what a shame. We're out of the FA Cup. Because what he really wants to do is keep QPR up and maybe spend some more money and advance his managerial career in QPRs. Does anybody disagree? Anybody feel there's anything wrong with that?
Well, you and I disagree about the FA Cup. I still think it's a fantastic competition, and it keeps your fans happy. It gives them something to look forward to. Now all they've got to look forward to is a scrap against relegation. It might be good for Mark Hughes. I'm not sure it's good for the fans or the club.
Dicko, is this realpolitik? Do you think fans would drop? Do you think fans prefer a cup run or
both?
Well, I'd say clear, there are times when it can stretch resources, but blimey, it's the FA Cup. It's not the Champions League. It's a game every 3 or 4 weeks, and it can create some positive momentum. So you know, it's not a competition to. Yeah, their priority is to stay up, but you know, that's no reason why they can't try and stay up and try and beat Chelsea on Saturday.
We spent a lot of time debating what to have as our debate topic, and then that decision was sort of made for us when Duncan Castles and the Sunday Times started reporting that Jose Mourinho had decided he was going to leave Real Madrid, and then he sort of did this nice big graphic with, like, which team will Jose choose, and because, of course, it's entirely up to him. I did a little bit of reporting on it, because best I have ascertained... He's very happy to put the message out that he wants to leave at the end of the season, and everything is probably changeable between now and then. Dicko, you're probably the biggest Mourinho fan here.
I'm not saying he's a bad manager. We just had certain disagreements over the ethics of the game.
Exactly. But seriously, I think this is. I mean, he's done this before when, you know, he's sort of threatened to leave and whatever, and it's his way of keeping people in line. And he feels he's not, you know, he feels he's unhappy that that this sort of furious row he had with Sergio Ramos in training was leaked entirely to the media, and he feels he should get more respect and blah blah blah. But so he might well change his mind, especially, I mean, they're likely going to win the league, but I want to get a sense from you, is it a situation where he really can write his own ticket? I mean, if he comes, and you know, as much as City might talk about Mancini or Arsenal might talk about Wenger or whatever, or even Chelsea or Villas-Boas, if he goes straight to the owner and says, hey, sack him, get me because I am the special one, Well, do you think clubs would get rid of their big managers?
Well, it's fascinating. I mean, I think City would have done. I think, you know, 18 months or so ago, yeah, I understand that City were pretty much offering Mourinho a blank cheque. But things have moved on since then. You know, Mancini's been backed, you know, hugely, not just in terms of sort of signings in and out, but, you know, the whole Tevez row and just, you know, the hierarchy standing sort of four square behind him. So, you know, if Mancini takes City to the league title, you know, it's obviously certain clubs, Real Madrid prominent among them, have sacked managers in those situations. But you know, it's certainly not. It would go against the grain of what we've seen at City in the last 6 months to a year. You know, for them to do so, you know, they've tried to sort of, you know, paint themselves as a sort of rational club that are trying to build something, not as a, you know, Real Madrid just sort of firing people left, right, and centre. So there's that issue to be brought in. United, obviously, I was speaking to someone seeing United again the other day, and on the one, you know, A, they're not expecting Fergie to bow out, you know, anytime soon, and also, you know, you come back to this fascinating debate about sort of the values of Manchester United and whether Mourinho reflects them. So it turns around in his own, you know, and then, well, then you could argue, well, if he, you know, does he want to come back to a club like a Tottenham where, you know, he's going to be the underdog without the resources to take on the big boys? So it's probably not quite as simple as maybe, you know, it was painted in the Sunday Times in terms of, you know, he does write his own ticket. But given the quality he's got, can any club afford to ignore Jose Mourinho?
Looking at some of the other, I mean, I think, you know, Dicko summed up those clubs very well. Looking at some of the other possibilities that another three clubs out there you can mention. Chelsea have just appointed Villas Boas. Things aren't, you know, things are up, they're down, they're still in the top four, but you still wouldn't see them abandoning the project after just a year. With Kroenke, I'm going to ask the two Arsenal people here, but with Kroenke in charge and given how much he likes spending, I'm assuming we can rule out that he's going to boot Wenger.
Michael, one thing could I say, yep. I do think, you know, I mean, like you said, Jose is many things, you know, brilliant manager, tactician, organizer, etc., but he is a great big tart as well. I mean, as you say, every time he comes back, sets foot in England, he deliberately drops in a piece saying, oh, I love England. There's been the cult of the manager. There is the cult of the manager here, and particularly the cult of Mourinho, in a way that he's not got anywhere else. And he loves that, and I'm sure he wants to return to England at some stage. But he isn't half a tart the way he sort of keeps flashing, you know, flashing a bit of leg and a bit of skirt at English clubs and English fans.
Well, Dicko, I would say as a coach and a manager, every club would want him, but as a person, I don't think they would. There's lots of clubs now that wouldn't want all the aggro that goes with his press comments and the way he actually. Doesn't give the club a good image at times.
The other thing is, does he come as a package with Jorge Mendes too? Because obviously, you know, and that's one of the issues at Real Madrid. I mean, they got rid of everybody in the hierarchy between him and the president, just one guy. And this is a situation where, you know, you've got Di Maria, you've got Cristiano Ronaldo, you've got Carvalho, you've got Pep, you've got Contrao. I mean, one agent has the manager, six players. At Inter they were able to keep him out, although he still managed to deposit that colossal turd, otherwise known as Ricardo Quaresma, on his doorstep. Is that something that clubs think about when they sign managers, who their agent is? I mean, QPR obviously don't, but does that come into it, Dicko?
I think it does. We sort of go back to the sort of Manchester United issue of control, control of the club not wanting to just sort of hand over everything. You know, I don't think necessarily to the Mourinho way. Like you say, and that involves him being able to sort of, I mean, you might, I'm sure someone will retort saying, well, haven't they done that with Fergie? But, you know, he did come with an understanding of what Manchester United built by Busby, the huge accent on youth that he has tried, not always succeeded, but at times obviously spectacularly succeeded in cultivating. And I do think Stuart's right. I think that Mourinho brings a whole set of baggage which I do not think United are rushing to embrace now. You know, equally for United, you've got an issue of who are the alternatives. You've got one of the hardest handovers, you know, one of the most complicated, daunting, intimidating handovers in the history of football management, taking over from Ferguson. And how many guys are there out there that you trust absolutely to not let standards drop? And he has to be on that list, even though, like Stuart, I very much come from the camp that finds Mourinho, you know, when someone called him anti-football, I understood where they were coming from.
I will bet anybody here a steak dinner. In fact, I will take you all out to dinner. I guarantee you he is, as long as the Glazers are in charge, Mourinho has zero chance of becoming manager of Manchester United. They will not countenance him in any way. And it's got nothing to do with anti-football or his image. It simply has to do with his spending and some of the moves he makes. And even in terms of power, they will tolerate certain things from Sir Alex Ferguson because he is Sir Alex Ferguson. And in many ways, he's built the modern Manchester United.
He's earned the right to be.
And he's earned the right to do certain things.
Be a dictator at Manchester United.
You know, Mourinho, no, they wouldn't do it. Now, if, you know, wealthy Asian zillionaire X, who's always linked to the club when the Glazers want to sell some shares, if he buys the club, then, you know, maybe it's a different story. One club we haven't mentioned, but which Duncan does mention, are Liverpool, who I believe, and Dicko, you might know more about this, but I believe that before it's hiring Benitez, there was a little bit of a simpatico between them and Mourinho, who of course was at Porto at the time and wasn't quite Mourinho yet. Is that
you're back to the money issue, aren't you? It's like you said. I mean, he wants the club he wants to go to. He wants to spend money. He wants, you know, as you say, Mendes as gatekeeper to to be bringing in a few favoured players. And Liverpool, you know, Liverpool's rationale for Fenway buying the group was built on financial fair play coming in and curtailing Chelsea and City and allowing them to sort of float naturally back towards the top of English football. And, you know, Mourinho would be given, you know, huge authority at Liverpool, but would he be given stacks of money? Not the sort of money he wants to spend, I'm sure. I mean, it's an interesting one. You try to imagine what would be going through Mourinho's mind. Does he want to take over an established club with all the sort of expectations that brings, or does he want to go back to being a sort of underdog and dragging another club up from the bottom? I would have thought the sort of situation he's in, he's more used to being the sort of top dog, having the power, having the money, having the clout.
I'd argue that he was only the underdog once, and that was in the 6 months he spent at Laria. I mean, outside of that, I think he likes being in, you know, I mean, if you look at where he's worked, but even before Porto, Benfica, Barcelona as an assistant, I mean, come on. But just to wrap this up, on Liverpool, Julian, is it this sort of thing? I mean, we touched on Dalglish before, where I'm trying to imagine, if I'm the owners, I can't sack Dalglish. I can suggest that he might want to resign, and Dalglish, when we've seen in his own record, if things, you know, if he feels he's not doing a job up to his standards, and he doesn't have any more answers, you know, he actually is one of those people who I think has a dignity to say, okay, let's leave somebody else a go, rather than hanging around and waiting for paychecks and compensations and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's true. I think the problem could be Damian Comerley. You know, we talked before about Jorge Mendes arriving with Mourinho and everything. And if you remember the Mourinho problem with Valdano at Real Madrid. I know Damian Comerley is not Valdano, but Comerley is very, very important, you know, at Liverpool today. You know, he does everything at Liverpool today.
Actually, I'm just going to ask you, because you're French, I assume you know the situation better than me, just so there's nothing to do with anything. Does Comerley take credit for signing Jordan Henderson and Stuart Downing, or is it one of those things where it becomes like a big fudge and like, those are Kenny, I got Suarez. I mean, or does he...
From what
because
I,
he does not give a straight answer.
No, he doesn't.
It's always these group communal decisions, but the good ones... But he's very happy to talk about Suarez and never happy to talk
about
Downing.
Exactly. That's typically, you know, what kind of guy he is when he works.
All people do that, don't they?
Yeah, probably. But when the guy is good, he's his. When he's not good, he's, you know, it was everybody's. Okay. Yeah, Dalglish. And I know, but I do believe that could be a problem, you know, for Mourinho to come, you know, for Liverpool to have him as well, is that Comerley and Mourinho can't work together. That's quite clear.
There is, of course, one other big job in England, and Mourinho didn't specify necessarily he wants to come back to the Premier League, but the England there'll be a managerial opening for the England job after the Euros. Mourinho has applied to be England manager once before. Anybody see that happening? Julian, one sentence.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes, definitely.
Stuart.
Oh, I can't see the FA taking that. I can't see him getting on with the FA, Mourinho.
No. Yeah, because they're such wonderfully principled people. Dicko?
I think it's unlikely. I mean, how serious was he the last time?
According to Duncan Castles, he was very serious, but the FA weren't serious enough, and they weren't up to his standard. But there's different people running the FA now. Time now for some quick hits. Ooh, she's going to start with Arsenal. Gee, I wonder who that one's going to. Arsenal go 2 goals down at halftime at home to Aston Villa, get booed off the pitch, then storm back to win 3-2. So, Stuart, you see, booing and abusing your own fans really does help them pull their finger out, get off their backsides, and go and win the game. Am I right?
Well, I'm not sure you're right, but what Arsenal did in the first 25 minutes of the second half, they played with an urgency, a passion, a desire. They played forward-thinking football. They played the ball forward. They ran forward. They defended as if their lives depended on it. That's what they should be doing at the start of the games, not at the end of the games.
Where anybody else, we talk about an inspirational halftime speech and stuff like that, right?
No, it was the crowd.
Got it, the crowd. Gus Poyet and Brighton served up some good old-fashioned FA Cup giant killing, knocking Newcastle out of the cup. Dicko, how good is Gus Poyet? Last we heard of him, he was defending Luis Suarez, and he went from being a good guy to a bad guy again. Is he ready to be a good guy again, and maybe even a viable Premier League manager?
Well, I was going to say, I wouldn't employ him on his race relations skills. Wasn't he the guy who said, yes, if you're fat in Uruguay, I call you fatty. What's the problem? So equal equalities, I'm not so sure. But yeah, no, very good. A couple of friends of mine are Brighton fans and would weep, literally, if he left. He's doing that well.
Sticking with Newcastle, Alan Smith is reportedly on his way to MK Dons, who will pay 5% of his wages, with Mike Ashley picking up the rest. Julian, I don't want to pick on Alan Smith. Many footballers are in that situation. But is there a part of you who has sympathy with Smith? Can we imagine a world where footballers don't have guaranteed contracts? And if you're just crocked for so long or rubbish for so long, they can just give you some money and kick you to the curb?
I've got no sympathy. I think it's a disgrace, really. For all the money he's been paid for the last few years to do nothing, he should go to MK Dons and play for free, whole season.
Well, it's not his fault he's not as good as he was.
He's just cashed in, doing nothing at all for like so many years. Just should play for free or go Sunday league football.
There you go.
Right, Gab, one for you. Eden Hazard last night revealed on French TV that he was going to finish the season at Lille and then move to England. He didn't say which club. Do you think it's a good thing for English Premier League, and where do you think he's going to go?
Well, obviously, he was linked with Chelsea earlier this month. I wasn't able to stand that one up at all. I do know Chelsea looked at him before. He was would have been the alternative to Juan Mata. You could envision a system, a Christmas tree with Mata and Hazard and Torres in front. Maybe that's what Villas-Boas is plotting. Only thing I would say is that front three doesn't really give you too much in terms of physical presence and the ability to press and whatnot. But yeah, a tremendous player and part of that Belgian renaissance I often like to talk about. All right, that's all we've got time for this week. But remember, you can go to www.thetimes.co.uk. You'll find your news, your gossip, your analysis, web chats. I do mine on Tuesdays. Dicko, you do one as well, right?
Thursday, 2 o'clock, 1 o'clock, whatever it is.
Thursdays with Dicko, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, whatever it is. Also, a bunch of us are on Twitter. I am, Julian, you're on there. And of course, Dicko, you are too, right?
At Dickinson Times.
At Dickinson Times, not to be confused with Emily Dickinson.
If you're a Liverpool fan and want to abuse me, join the club.
Liverpool fans, at Dickinson Times, feel free to abuse. And also poetry lovers, you might quote some Emily Dickinson to him. He enjoys that as well. Till next week, bye-bye.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.